You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, as the Senate wraps up its hearings for Supreme Court nominee Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, Jen White gets your reactions to the judge and the politics. That's today at 6 on 1A+. Now, those Senate confirmation hearings are highlighting the partisan divide, but Democrats and Republicans have worked together to pass some significant legislation in recent weeks, including a congressional spending bill, aid for Ukraine, before that President Biden's infrastructure package. The bipartisan cooperation comes amid concerns over an increasing partisan divide in Congress and in the public. So what's really going on? Are politicians actually working together better than we think they might, or just finding some specific issues with common ground? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see signs that Republicans and Democrats can work together better sometimes than we might expect? If so, why is that? Do you want to see more bipartisan cooperation? Are there specific things that you think could bridge divides in Congress? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Ruth Block Rubin is an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Chicago. She's the author of the book Building the Block, Intra-Party Organization in the U.S. Congress. Ruth, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, Ruth, Congress is hopefully gridlocked because of a partisan divide, or, hey, look, Congress is working together on some bipartisan stuff. How do we sort it out to figure out if there's a trend one way or another?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I would say, you know, one thing that political scientists have noted is that at least since the 1970s, the bulk of what Congress actually produces is bipartisan. The problem is that for average citizens, we don't tend to hear about it. Some folks have even called this the work of the secret Congress, the idea being that Congress is secretly quite productive and in a bipartisan way. But those are not the issues that we hear most about as voters, in part because they're not that exciting, and parties themselves don't want to necessarily emphasize the ways in which they're similar and able to work together, but rather want to highlight their differences because that makes it easier for us as voters to decide between the two.
Well, that makes me wonder about us in the media. Do we feed that by focusing on those issues where the politicians are highlighting the differences maybe too much?
I mean, I realize I'm in your house, but the short answer would be, I think so. I mean, I do think there's a reason politicians know that fights are more fun to cover and more interesting to viewers. And that's the kind of action that people want to see. Stories of harmony are not necessarily ones that are going to sell. And so there's some value. But it's also the case that I think we tend to think that parties are interested in cultivating reputations that are distinct from each other, make it easier for voters to tell the difference between the two parties. You certainly don't want voters to say, well, what's the difference? I could vote for anyone. It's not going to matter. And so there's a lot of incentives for political actors, whether they're presidents or members of Congress, to sort of highlight the differences between the two parties, even though on some lower salience issues, there's maybe more agreement.
I wonder about the impact of primaries here, because we have a lot of safe congressional seats, a lot of safe states where if I'm a member of Congress, I'm not so much worried about getting beat by the other party, with some exceptions, but I might be worried about a primary opponent coming up and showing pictures of me shaking hands with the leader of the other party as we agree on this infrastructure bill or whatever. Is there an incentive structure there that leads to some divisiveness?
I mean, I certainly think that's at play. I think pushing against that is the idea that particularly for incumbent members of Congress, there's a desire to show that they've actually made a difference and are able to deliver to their constituents. And so to be able to claim credit for some of these lower salience wins can matter quite a bit. You want to show that you're effective as a representative or senator. And so, you know, if you're a smart legislative entrepreneur and you can sort of bring together a group of people that want to show that they can get things done, you actually can pass legislation. Both of these factors are at work at times. And so that I think can help to explain why sometimes it seems like Congress is intractable and at other times highly productive.
We're talking to Ruth Block Rubin from the University of Chicago Political Science Department, looking at partisan divides, but also partisan cooperation to pass specific bills in Congress. More of it than we might think, she says. Call in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts. Should we in the media pay more attention to bipartisan cooperation when it does happen? Do you want to see more of that cooperation? Do you think there's too much highlighting of the divides by members of Congress, by members of the media? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's look at some of the specific items where we saw some cooperation. There's a recent spending bill passed, delaying a government shutdown and that sort of thing again. A lot of attention or some attention being paid to what we used to call earmarks showing up in that. Can you talk about that? It didn't end up being a crisis like some of these spending bills seem to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do think it's important to recognize that at least historically, spending bills have often been pieces of legislation where it's the easiest to get bipartisan cooperation because you can provide we call them today earmarks, but, you know, instead like projects that individual members want in their districts or states. And so it's easier to build a coalition that crosses party lines. In that way, I think we tend to think infrastructure has more bipartisan potential. But it's also the case that, you know, you have members who have longstanding commitments to certain issues. And if you can fold them together into an omnibus spending bill, that is a way to cross the kinds of partisan borders, which in other contexts, when it's simply about sort of a clear issue that both parties have staked out opposing positions on, it's a lot harder to win over individual members.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Scott is with us in Iron River. Scott, hi.
Greetings to you both. My point is, when I try to find places that I can agree on, or we can agree on, with friends who are vastly different in political beliefs, one thing we can all agree on is we truly want people to go, whether it's local, state, or national, to go there and work together to get things done. And my point is always, this falls on the people, on the voters. And so I think it behooves us all to insist on our elected representatives to go and work together and not, you know, and vote for that. And for candidates and our leaders to speak to the people about that, that no more partisan politics. It's up to us, the people.
Scott, thanks a lot for that call. Is there a reward, Ruth, from voters, from candidates who can make the case that, yeah, I do work across party lines?
Well, it's not as much as one would like. I think political science studies have tended to find that, in fact, voters are more likely to punish what they see as flip-flopping. And so there are challenges for candidates who make promises that they then struggle to keep by trying to be more open-minded when they get to Congress. And so really, if voters want to see more bipartisanship, more voters need to reward that when it comes to the polls. And in some states and constituencies, they do. But it's certainly not a universally held value.
Scott, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Douglas joins us now in Cedar Grove. Douglas, hi.
Hi. My question is, she's talked about going back to the 70s, and I think that's way too long. What I want to know is, any major bill passed since the time of Gingrich? Because Gingrich's policy was anybody who cooperated was going to be targeted to be removed.
Douglas, thanks for the call. I think a key word there is major, Ruth. What kind of legislation, would you point toward with substantial bipartisan cooperation since the Newt Gingrich era?
Well, I mean, you can point to a variety of pieces of legislation. I would note that just in Congress today, there are pieces of legislation that have passed, but would probably not qualify as major. That's certainly the problem. The issues that have a great deal of partisan politics swirling around them are, in fact, harder to pass. But that doesn't mean that you can't pass pieces of legislation that are perhaps lower salient. So, for example, recently, a piece of legislation that would make it easier for individuals who have suffered from sexual assault or sexual harassment not to be forced into arbitration is now going to Joe Biden to sign. So there are things that are very important to individual people that are passing, but on big ticket issues, it is harder. But the legislation that does pass is almost always bipartisan.
Thanks for the call, Douglas. We're talking about bipartisanship in Congress with University of Chicago political science professor Ruth Block Rubin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you like seeing politicians work across party lines? Or if you support one party or the other, do you worry about too much compromise from the people on your side? Would you rather see your political leaders be firm on their agendas or be willing to compromise even on some things that might be important to you to get something else out of it? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with University of Chicago political science professor Ruth Block Rubin about cooperation between Democrats and Republicans in Congress to pass legislation, bills big and small. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see more bipartisan cooperation in Congress, more compromise between the parties? Do you think anybody's particularly responsible when things do break down, when partisanship does block things from getting done? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ruth, some bipartisanship on issues related to Ukraine lately. A lot of support for aid to Ukraine. A bill in the House on sanctions against Russia passed overwhelmingly, just 8 votes against it. Maybe hung up in the Senate now with at least one Republican objection. Is foreign policy an area where at least sometimes we see parties reach across the lines?
I think it's certainly the case that over the past several decades, there's been more consensus on foreign policy than domestic policy. But it's also the case that in general, Congress takes action on issues where public opinion is clearly in favor of that, with some important exceptions like gun control. And if you look at public opinion on the conflict in Ukraine, it's quite clear that Americans are a vast majority of Americans are supportive of Ukraine and interested in seeing aid and economic sanctions continue. And so in that way, it's kind of like a congressional no-brainer. And it's not clearly partisan, at least not yet.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Jim is with us in Cedarburg. Jim, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Rob. I just need to say that there's no such thing as... Look, they go to Washington... It's a casino, and the casino pays off in the fact that it's pay to play, and they don't even think about the constituencies. All they care about is getting reelected, and they give us this notion, perhaps, that we think we have choice. No, Ralph Nader called it duopoly. The days were bipartisanship back in the 60s, 70s, when they had common...
I got to Jim. I think a cynical view of politicians and members of Congress, Ruth, that I think a lot of people share.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's understandable. There's a lot to be frustrated about. I do think it's important to recognize that members of Congress do care about winning re-election, and they see the relationship with voters as part of that. But there are a lot of factors that go into it. And it's also worth noting that, you know, from an individual voter or constituent experience, it's gotten a lot harder for members of Congress to be responsive, in part because the number of constituents that members of Congress are expected to represent has actually increased dramatically. And so it's just gotten to be a tougher job. Now, I'm not here to defend their record, but I do think it's important to recognize that with limited staff and more people to serve, it's gotten to be a pretty tough job.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Ruth, over the years, sometimes in big issues, we see, you know, a gang of six or a group of 12 or whatever, where you get some Democrats, some Republicans on a big issue like immigration reform, for example, get together, try to hash something out that they can bring back to their own parties and try to build support for. Do those things work?
Yes, with a resounding yes. I think that kind of collaboration is incredibly important to lay the groundwork for bipartisan collaboration, particularly when it's not spearheaded by leaders. The sort of traditional model is leaders go fishing for votes across the aisle to insulate their own majorities, and that's all well and good. But to forge truly centrist policy, if you will, you often need this kind of cross-party collaboration that's engineered by the members themselves. And these organizations are really critical to doing that, in part because it's not well rewarded unless you make you get everything across the finish line. And so having organization to sort of structure that collaboration really matters, both in terms of drafting the legislation and lining up votes in favor of it.
Is there much of that going on right now? I'm speaking in the past tense about it. I'm not aware of big high-profile efforts like that going on in this Congress.
Well, I would say you wouldn't expect them to be high profile.
Ah.
There are organizations like the Problem Solvers Caucus, which are bipartisan, and they have sort of become a forum for members to talk about issues that are probably not on the average political observer's radar, in part because those are the areas where you can make fruitful collaboration without worrying about electoral blowback. But on more prominent issues, I think that's where it has become quite difficult, in part because as majorities have gotten more narrow, the incentive for the minority party to sort of hold their line and not help those in control out has just created a really pernicious incentive to lead to failure.
We are talking about bipartisanship and when it can overcome partisan divides in Congress with Ruth Block Rubin, assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Chicago, author of the book Building the Block, Intraparty Organization in the U.S. Congress. Ruth, I wonder, is it easier to do, and I'm thinking here of like immigration reform, there are efforts to do everything at once that didn't seem to go, you know, security and changing paths to citizenship, that kind of thing. And there were arguments like, no, let's take it one piece at a time. Is there a better method on big high-profile issues between everything at once versus a bit at a time?
Well, it does seem to be the case that the majority party, once it comes to power, tries to spend a lot of its time and energy passing an incredibly ambitious piece of legislation, in part to give a win to a president in power or to help members have something to brag about with voters. But winning on those issues is incredibly difficult. And so if you are a betting person, you might say that incremental change is a more productive path, although it may not be winning you lots of glory at home, which is part of the problem.
Let's go back to our callers now. Katie is with us in Spring Green. Katie, hello.
Hi, I just wanted to say I read about a bill that Tammy Baldwin sponsored in 2020 that was unanimously voted on by both sides in Congress and signed by Trump to create a three-digit hotline number for the suicide prevention line that's going into effect this summer. And if we had heard more about it, maybe some of these bills in other states wouldn't have as much support as they do. It was the first unanimously voted on bill that was explicitly to protect LGBTQ youth and veterans, and A really good thing that they're doing.
Katie, thanks for the call. And Ruth, this isn't necessarily the sort of thing that ends up being high profile if there isn't a big fight about it.
Exactly. And it creates a sort of odd paradox where in some ways we want to keep these issues quiet because it makes it easier for members of Congress to actually legislate on them. But then we as voters don't know about them in order to reward them for it. And that seems like a problem for the institution.
Katie, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Ruth, I think sometimes we think, okay, there was a golden age where there really was significant cooperation and we've fallen away from that. Is there truth to that?
Well, nostalgia is a dangerous thing. There certainly was a period of time in the mid-century, the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, where there was a lot of cross-party collaboration. But in large part, that was because there were Democrats in the Democratic Party that were quite conservative, particularly on racial issues, and worked quite well with Republicans who had similar viewpoints. And there were quite liberal Republicans who worked with Democrats. And then over time, the parties sorted themselves out. And so now we have more partisanship. But you might say all the players are still there. They're just in the different parties as opposed to a cross party. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you got better politics or policy back then. What we might say is more importantly that the majority parties in those eras were much, much larger. And so that made it more possible to pass sweeping legislation that was part of the New Deal or the Fair Deal or Great Society that has made a big difference in people's lives. And the problem we face in Congress today is that, as we see in the Senate majority is very, very, very slim. And so it's very difficult. You have to have all of your own party members in agreement. And that is just about as hard to do as bipartisan work.
Time for one more quick call. Chuck is with us in Waupaca. Chuck, hello.
Yeah, hi. I'm just wondering about whether or not election reform, particularly in the primaries, might be a solution to this. I guess, what is it, the state of Maine, people can vote for, you know, sort of rank order. So it kind of takes away the real sharp partisanship in the primaries.
Chuck, thanks for the call. Ranked order, as some states do, like not a Republican versus Democrat, but an open field primary. Ruth, briefly, are those things that could change the partisan makeup?
I think it's an open question. There's certainly a possibility that that would allow more moderate members who you might think would be more likely to work across the aisle come to the floor and win. But you might also worry that the incentives to distinguish your party's candidates from others would lead to even more of this kind of messaging where the distinctions are being drawn as opposed to emphasizing the commonalities.
Thanks for that call. And Ruth, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ruth Block Rubin is an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Chicago, author of the book Building the Block, Intra-Party Organization in the U.S. Congress. She is with us today looking at recent examples of bipartisanship in Congress on a variety of measures and what the future could hold. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, COVID numbers have been down nationwide lately. There is some concern, though, about the latest variant in the mix. We'll get the latest on COVID-19 plus vaccine news. And it's this week's edition of Food Friday. Sometimes you have time for slow food. Sometimes dinner needs to happen now. We'll get advice on making delicious dinners when we're on the clock. That's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, we talk about the best movies of 2021 and the Oscars, which air live this Sunday with a film critic. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, the U.S. Supreme Court has rejected part of a redistricting plan approved by the Wisconsin Supreme Court. WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief joins the show to break down the decision and what comes next for Wisconsin's election maps. First, the 94th Academy Awards are this Sunday. We're going to take a look at many of the top nominees, including streaming service films, The Power of the Dog from Netflix and Apple TV Plus's Coda. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What's the best movie you've seen over the last year, whether it's up for an Oscar or not? What movie do you think should win Best Picture? Do you have questions about some of the movies up, whether they're worth seeing if you haven't caught them yet? And have you been going to theaters to see a movie, streaming new movies at home? Both? Or maybe neither? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Reggie Ponder is a film critic, also known as Reggie the Real Critic. He appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago and critiques movies for several other media outlets. You can follow him on Twitter at Reggie the Real Critic. Reggie, welcome back to the show.
Rob, how are you, man?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, hooray for Hollywood. this is that time of year, man. I know it's a Christmas song, but it's the most wonderful time of the year, man.
We should always have you sing us in. That's fun. All right. What are the big stories, before we get into particular movies, what are the big trends or stories you're watching for at this year's Oscars?
We're looking to see if there will be one movie that will dominate. And I don't think that will be the case. You have several films with numerous nominations, but will one film dominate? And I think that's the biggest trend. I think what the industry is looking for is how many people will actually watch the Oscars. I think that's going to be a very important thing. And I do think that in your introduction, you talked a little bit about streaming services. I think that that debate has gone, whether the streaming services should be part of it or not. I think that debate is a done deal now with what Netflix and all the other streaming services. Everybody's going into streaming. So that those are the things that I'll say for now.
Netflix, you mentioned they're hoping for an Oscar with The Power of the Dog. Let's hear a bit from that movie.
I wonder what little lady made these.
I did, sir.
All right. Power of the Dog, Reggie, is, I'm hearing a lot of buzz. This one has a good chance. What do you think?
I think it does. I think that this is the type of film that Hollywood likes. I will tell you, there is nothing that I could say that is negative about this film. However, it did not resonate with me, Rob. I didn't walk out of the theater feeling like, wow, I'd want to see it again. The acting is superb. The directing is superb. The cinematography is superb. They have all the ingredients, but I think the individual parts don't add up to the sum.
And remind us what The Power of the Dog is for people who haven't seen it, haven't seen the buzz about it yet.
It is a, I'm putting my little quotes up. It's a Western, and it's really about two brothers who are cattlemen, and one has found love and he's really about the business of being a cattleman. And then his brother has not and is really a loner, but he's really about actually getting in there dirty, down and dirty. And it really is about the trajectory of their two lives and how they go. And it's interesting in that regard to look at both of these brothers and how they look at life and how they approach the business and people as well.
So Reggie, you say a well-done movie, but not one that stuck with you. What are your personal favorites for Best Picture?
Belfast is a film. Firstly, Rob, did you see Belfast? Because if you didn't, then I'm going to hang up.
Well, you know how this works, Reggie. I live vicariously through you. I have seen some of the movies this year. I have not seen that one. Yeah, you always get me on that.
I'm kidding.
Thanks for not hanging up.
I'm totally kidding. I really like Belfast. I think that Kenneth Branagh really did a phenomenal job with this movie. It's to me, a love letter to Belfast, but it's a specific story that has universal applications. It's really about the Catholics and the Protestants and the conflict during that time, seen through the eyes of a 19-year-old boy. And it is so good. It's about family. It's about choices. It's about trauma. It is so, so well done. I really like that. Additionally, I like Coda. And it's been getting a lot of buzz lately, so it might do some surprising things as it relates to the Academy Awards. And it's really about a child of deaf adults and how she has to navigate life for them as well as navigate life for herself. And she's in high school trying to figure out who she is and what she wants to do. But at the same time, the family depends on her. And then I loved King Richard. Richard Williams, the father of Serena and Venus Williams, was much maligned in the way in which he told people what was coming. It came to fruition. And I think that the way in which they told the story shows the humanity, his vulnerability, and his vision.
And King Richard is played by this up-and-coming actor, kind of off the radar, a fellow named Will Smith. And he's up for a Best Actor.
Yeah, I haven't really heard of that guy. I think that guy, I know for a fact, actually, that guy actually lost to Denzel Washington the last time he was nominated for an Oscar.
Uh-oh.
And this time he's up against, Denzel Washington. I don't think Denzel Washington will be winning, but it's interesting that they both are on the docket. So those are three of the movies that I like. But Rob, really, really quickly, is that your listeners should know what the films that are being nominated. So it's Belfast, Coda, Don't Look Up, which I liked, Dune, which I liked, King Richard, which I like, Licorice Pizza. I think I said this, if I didn't say this to you, I like licorice and I like pizza, but I do not like them together. So I did not like this movie. Nightmare Alley, the Power of the Dog, Tick, Tick, Boom, Garfield was phenomenal in this, and West Side Story. So those are the films that are up for nomination.
Talking to Reggie Ponder, also known as Reggie the Real Critic. It is Oscar season. We're talking about movies. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen some of the movies on that list, or do you want to know more about them before you go and see them? Do you have a favorite movie of the last year up for an Oscar or not? 800-642-1234. And let us know, are you watching movies at the theater or in the comfort of your living room? 800-642-1234 is the number, or email ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And Reggie James on Facebook writes, I hope Dune does well. It's up for a bunch of awards. Reggie, I saw it on a small screen, and I know it would have been better on a big screen. I still liked it. What are your thoughts on Dune for Best Picture? And then, like a lot of science fiction movies, it's up for a lot of technical categories.
It will win some of those technical categories without a doubt. I do not think that it's really in the running for a Best Picture. And I actually, Rob, have a bone to pick with the Academy and many of the organizations that do these awards by putting 10 pictures. If you put 10 pictures, then how come you didn't have 10 actors? How come you didn't have 10 actresses? Because you're just putting those 10 pictures in there, in my opinion, as a business move.
Yeah, there was some controversy about that, the idea that, okay, with five movies, there are a lot of the bigger commercial ones that didn't make the cut. I don't know, what was the thinking behind boosting it from what used to be, I think for a long time, exactly five movies?
I think because people were really saying that there were movies that were just overlooked, so that these other movies are probably deserving of an Oscar. But at the end of the day, either you expand all categories, or I don't understand how you do that. That doesn't make sense to me. But I understand that they want to give recognition to some other films. And some people think that it also might be a consolation prize to always be able to say that you're Oscar nominated. At least you'll have that in your pocket.
They say it's an honor just to be nominated, Reggie. Is it less of an honor when there's 10 of them?
I think so. But you know, if Tick, Tick, Boom, which I really liked, doesn't win an Oscar, you'll know that on all the advertisements, it'll say Oscar nominated film. So I think they'll be totally happy with getting that nomination.
Talking to Reggie Ponder, also known as Reggie the Real Critic, talking about the upcoming Oscars, the best movies of the last year. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there any movies or actors or actresses that didn't get nominated you thought should have? What is the favorite thing you've seen, the best performance you've seen over the last year, whether it's up for an award or not? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our conversation with film critic Reggie Ponder about what to expect at the Academy Awards on Sunday. Some of the best movies of last year, best performances too. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Have you been watching movies this last year? What have you liked? Where have you watched them? What were your favorites? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We heard from Susan in Menominee, who couldn't stay on the line. Susan says, oh, Reggie, Power of the Dog should win. Susan liked that the movie explored gay relationships in a Western and thought there was a really sinister element also that was done well. Susan's not alone, right, Reggie?
Oh, she's not. And Power of the Dog, I'm a member of the Critics' Choice Awards, and Power of the Dog won there. It won in many other, I think it also won the BAFTAs. So Power of the Dog might actually win. It just didn't resonate with me. It wasn't one of those movies where I left feeling like, wow, that's the best movie that I saw of the year. I think I'm gonna be proven wrong, because a lot of people loved Power of the Dog.
Susan, thanks for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. Let's visit the best animated film, Reggie, with a taste of and an unescapable song, Encanto's hit, We Don't Talk About Bruno. All right. Is this your best animated film, Reggie?
We gonna talk about Bruno, ho, ho. Yeah, we, it's
it
gonna
says,
be,
no, it says we don't talk about.
We're going to talk about Bruno. Right. I don't see Encanto not winning this one. All of the films that are nominated are really good, by the way, in this category. I just think that Encanto is one of those films that makes everybody feel something. So you have Encanto, Flea, you have Luca, the Mitchells versus the Machine, and Raya and the Last Dragon. I think of those, it's Mitchell, the Mitchells versus the Machines could be an upset. Flea is a really great story. It's a real and true story. And Encanto, but I think Encanto will win. So I think we are going to be talking about Bruno.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. George is with us in Wanakee. George, hi.
Hi. Don't Look Up has my vote. I think Meryl Streep made for a great Donald Trump.
Right. And George, did you watch that at home? This is one that was available on streaming?
I held a couple parties at my house to watch that.
Parties, wow. George, thanks a lot for sharing that. Don't Look Up, another one from Netflix, Reggie.
Yeah, this was well done. And it's funny, it's smart, it's filled with so many stars, and it's political. So it'll make a number of people very, very mad. So I don't think it will win because it teeters on that, you know, those political messages, and some folks will be like, oh, no, I'm not going to vote for that.
Thanks a lot for that call, George, at 800-642-1234. Another one I wanted to check out, Drive My Car. This is a Japanese film about a widow developing a friendship with a 20-year-old chauffeur. Foreign language films don't generally do well for Best Picture, but we've got Parasite from Korea. That's from South Korea, winning the first foreign language movie as Best Picture. What do you think about Drive My Car? Does it have a shot?
I don't think it has a shot of winning the Best Picture. I think that would be a total upset. I think that when you look at a Parasite, there was so much buzz there and so many people saw it as well. I don't think so for Drive My Car, but it has a cult following among critics, and I think it will win. It might win the Best Foreign Film.
Now, Linda from Milwaukee called in, says more and more movies now are on the streaming services, but Linda says in order to watch them all, we have to subscribe to more and more streaming services. That can get pretty expensive. Reggie, I mean, going to theaters can get pretty expensive too. What do you think? Are we getting priced out of the market sometimes on these new movies?
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe for a family that might be struggling a little bit, yes, because if you have to do all these streaming services, 10, 15 of them, and so you want to see something from Apple, you want to see something from Paramount, you want to see something from Netflix. So all of a sudden you're just paying all these fees. So the yes is it could be expensive. The no is that you will not spend as much if you get that subscription that you would if you went to the movie. You're probably, if you have a family of four, you're probably going to spend somewhere upwards of $80 to $100 for a night at the movies.
Right, the popcorn's cheaper at home, for sure.
Yeah, that's right.
Talking to Reggie Ponder, also known as Reggie the Real Critic. Oscar season is here. Oscars this Sunday, looking at some of the best movies of last year. Still time for your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's check out some of the best performance categories. Let's start with Best Actress. We got Jessica Chastain as Tammy Faye Baker, Nicole Kidman as Lucille Ball, Kristen Stewart as Princess Diana. So a lot of people playing real people there among the other nominees. Who do you want to win? Who do you think is going to win?
I think Nicole Kidman is going to win, and being the Ricardos is very well done. So if she wins, you won't see me picketing any place soon. However, I think Penelope Cruz should win. Parallel Mothers is a standout performance. So when you watch it, it's about two women. One is a little older, and then one is in the teenager area, and they're both having children. And it shows their plight and their fight for motherhood. So I hope it's Penelope Cruz, but I don't think so.
And then Best Actor, we touched on a little bit. Will Smith in King Richard, Denzel Washington, The Tragedy of Macbeth. Then there's Andrew Garfield, Tick, Tick, Boom, Benedict Cumberbatch, Power of the Dog we've been talking about, and also Being the Ricardos, Javier Bardem. Where do you see that one going?
I see, just looking at what has been happening with the other awards, I think Will Smith will win, and I actually want Will Smith to win. So the only person, because I didn't love Power of the Dog, and I think that McPhee was so much, made that movie, and so Benedict Cumberbatch, if he won that, I'd be like, I don't think so. But if the others, Javier, Andrew Garfield, or Denzel won, I think that they will all be deserving.
Now, in Best Supporting Actor, we've got Tony Kotzer being the first deaf man to be nominated for an award in Best Supporting Actor for his role in a movie we talked about a little earlier, Coda. Here's a clip from Coda.
You're the girl with the deaf family?
Yeah.
I just want to tell you right now.
And you sing. Interesting.
Something's got a hold on me here.
So from the trailer of Coda there, your thoughts on the Best Supporting Actor category?
Yeah, I think that Troy Kotzer has a hold on it. On that Oscar, I don't see how he wouldn't win, other than a Cody Smith McPhee, who was phenomenal, a scene stealer in the Power of the Dog.
So Troy Kotzer there, and how about Best Supporting Actress?
I think for Best Supporting Actress, I actually think that this is probably the most clear cut category. Adriana DeBose for West Side Story will win. She showed that she is a true triple threat. She could act, she could dance, she could sing, and she stole the show in West Side Story.
All right, Reggie, the sour grapes part of the conversation. What are the missing nominations? Who should have been there that is not?
There are actually a number of folks that should be here that aren't. And I didn't prepare my full list, but what I'll tell you is that from an actor perspective, I was happy that Andrew Garfield got in, because he didn't get in on a number of other award shows. But there were some real solid performances throughout, and I think for Nightmare Alley, a lot of folks are feeling that it didn't get the attention that it should have gotten for that movie. So in several categories for Nightmare Alley.
All right. And Reggie, let's look to the future now. What movies are on your radar? What are you really looking forward to in the remainder of 2022?
I'm actually looking forward to the film, the circuit where you go to the festivals, not particularly films that people have already announced. What I'm finding a lot, Rob, is that going to these festivals, these little gems come out and you're like, wow, where did that film come from? So I just got finished with doing a little bit at South by Southwest, and saw a couple of movies there. I'm really looking forward to, this is the time for the festival season, and that's really what I'm looking forward to. There's some movies, of course. There's all these big blockbusters and so on and so forth. But the reason I want to mention this is that I want to encourage your listeners to think about the festivals.
Reggie, thanks as always for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Reggie Ponder is a film critic, also known as Reggie the Real Critic. He appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago and critiques movies for a bunch of other media outlets. You can follow him on Twitter at Reggie the Real Critic. He talked to us today about Oscars, and you could still share your thoughts, by the way. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let us know what you want to see win, or come back on Sunday during or after the Oscars. Let us know why you're happy or disappointed with who actually does win. Oh, yeah, the song you're hearing, I guess it's about Bruno. We won't talk about him, though. Coming up after the news, the U.S. Supreme Court has rejected Wisconsin's legislative redistricting plan just weeks before candidates are set to start running in those new districts. We'll take a closer look at the decision, what it means for Wisconsin's fall elections. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.